Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
And Hezekiah answered, "It's an easy thing for the shadow to go down 10 degrees. No, but let the shadow go backward 10 degrees. So Isaiah the prophet cried out to the Lord, and he brought the shadow 10 degrees backwards, or 10 steps backwards, by which it had gone down on the sundial of Ahaz. And so Hezekiah is healed, and he gets 15 more years. And that's a cool thing. You know, he didn't want to die, and he'd been faithful to the Lord, and he called out to God. In his bitterness, it says he wept bitterly. He called out to God, and God heard him, right? And he granted him 15 more years. And God does that with us because he cares about us. He loves us. But one of the things that happened during that 15 years is Hezekiah had another son. And the other son that he had was Manasseh. And he's the next guy that we're going to be talking about. Manasseh was the worst king of Judah that there ever was. Manasseh did things that were just over the top awful. You know, we've run into a couple of other kings that were out to lunch earlier on in 2 Chronicles. Manasseh was the worst of all of them. Manasseh ends up repenting, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but he doesn't end up repenting. But because of the sins of Manasseh, God said, "I'm not going to deliver the nation of Judah. Judah is going into captivity because of the things that Manasseh did." And so the point that I'm making to you is that God is good, and God will grant our requests. There are times when we can come before God, maybe God's shown you something, or maybe God's made it clear to you that a certain thing is going to be happening in your life. And one of the things that we need to figure out as believers is whether or not God really knows what he's doing, whether he really knows what he's doing with me, whether he really knows what he's doing with my wife, whether he really knows what he's doing with my children, whether he really knows what he's doing. And what Isaiah had said to Hezekiah in verse 1 was, "Thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live." Now, back in those days, the hope that we have of heaven wasn't something that was as clear as we have it now in the New Testament. We know that these guys believed in heaven because the Bible talks about the fact that I'm going to walk with God and then he's going to take me into glory. That's out of the book of Psalms, for example. I'm paraphrasing that. We know that they believed in heaven, but it's not like what we see in the New Testament where we have revelation after revelation of cool things that are going on and the hope that we're going to go home to be with the Lord. And so Hezekiah is afraid and he doesn't want to die. You know, he wants more life. And so he asked God for that. He's not satisfied with plan A, basically. He wants plan B from God. There's a passage in the Psalms where it talks about the children of Israel when they were in the wilderness. God had given them manna to eat, and they got tired of the manna. And not too long into it, they got tired of the manna, and they said, "Can God give us meat?" And they were challenging God. You know, God can give us this manna, like literally bread from heaven, fall on the ground, you go out, you pick it up. What is this stuff? Nourishes you, provides for these guys for 40 years in the wilderness, that kind of stuff. Every day is a miracle with these people. And not too far into it, they go, "Well, we're tired of this manna. This is all we see. This is all we're eating. I'm sick of it. I don't want to do manna anymore." It's like going to, you know, have you ever been in a foreign country? When you go to some countries, they have their staples, right? And so like if you go down into Mexico, it's beans and rice. That's their staple. And so if you're with a poor family, what you're going to get is beans and rice. And if you go into Africa, you know what the staple is there? No, actually it's beans and rice in Africa too. And if you go to India, what's the bread that they do in India? Naan. They do naan and rice. you know, basically. And that's what you get. You know, that's what you're going to get for breakfast. That's what you're going to get for lunch. That's what you're going to get for dinner. If you get a little meat in there at some point, then that's great. But it's the same thing over and over again. And, you know, you go to India for 2 weeks and you start getting tired of it. Tastes really great at first, but then you start getting tired of it. Same thing with these guys. Only this is bread from heaven, man. This is miraculous bread. And so they go, can God give meat? And God goes, well, get ready for meat, because this time tomorrow, you're going to have a lot of meat. You're going to have so much meat, it's going to come out through your nostrils. And it was a warning from God. And in the Psalms, when that story is being spoken of, it says that God granted their request, but sent leanness to their soul. And you never want to be in a position where you're begging God for something so much, when you know that God doesn't want that for you. But you're begging God for it so much that finally he goes, okay, you can have it. Because sometimes when you get it, it's not all that great. There's a reason that God didn't want you to have it at that point. And so something that happens with Hezekiah, that's a very cool thing. Here's another thing that happens here is the sun goes backwards. Okay, you got that, Jason, you got that picture of the steps? I'll put that up. Okay, this is kind of fuzzy, you guys, and I'm sorry, it's the only picture that I could find. But this is a set of steps. This is a platform that's sitting up on top here. You can't see the platform. It's on the other side. But you can see these steps that are going down here, right? Well, you got the same thing over here. Steps are going down here. And you can't really see them. Sorry about that. But what happens is the sun comes down. And I don't know that Hezekiah actually had a sundial, because in the Hebrew, it talks about steps. And these steps may have been set up so that they could figure out what time it was. And that kind of thing. But this is 8:05 a.m. Go ahead and do the next one. See where the shadow is? Okay, and then the shadow's over here a little over 2 hours afterwards, 2.5 hours or so, 2 hours and 40 minutes later. The shadow's over here, right, at the same time. And so, again, you can see these steps. And so, basically, what's happening here is you got a situation where if the sun is at this angle up here, the shadow is going to be right here. Let's put it right here. Say it's almost sundown, and so the shadow's right here. Well, the sun would be coming down this way. Can you see my? Yeah, the sun would be coming down this way, and as it comes this way, the shadow just gets longer and longer, right? But if the sun goes backwards, then it comes down 10 steps, like that. And so the sun's going backwards. So how's that happen? And this is one of those places that people like to pick on in the Bible, where you've got a problem in Scripture, because we know the sun doesn't go backwards, because the earth is rotating at a certain rate. It's about 1,000 miles per hour down at the equator. And the way you know that, it's 25,000 miles around the circumference of the earth, and it takes 24 hours, right? So it's close to 1,000 miles an hour at the equator. When you're further up where we're at, the speed goes down. But for the sun to go backwards and it be something that has to do with the revolution of the earth, you've got some issues there. Because first off, the earth has to stop, and the earth's moving 1,000 miles an hour. And so you stop the earth, and you can stop it, kind of slow down and stuff like that, but you know that's going to cause earthquakes, and it's probably going to slosh the oceans over the continents, and there's going to be some issues there, right? But, you know, can God take care of that? And this is something I need to preface this with. You know, when you're looking at God, God can do anything that he wants. And so he can stop the earth, flip it backwards, hold everything in place, do it in such a way that nobody can feel it. You know, he can do all that stuff if he wants to. But it's one of those things that's kind of a quandary. You have the same thing in the book of Joshua. Joshua is fighting against the people of Ai, and he asked the suns to stand still in the heavens. Not only the sun, but the moon stands still. So that lets you know that something weird is going on, right? And so what's happening here, and what can cause that whole thing? And there's another number of different ideas that people have come up with, and some have come up with the idea that there was some kind of refraction in the atmosphere. And so, you know what, you guys know what refraction is? Like when you're down by the river, and you stick a stick in the water, and you see how it looks like the stick is bending. Well, what's happening is the light is hitting the water, and the light is bending, is what's happening. That's why the stick looks that way. It's called refraction. And so maybe there was some kind of refraction so that the rays of the sun were refracted and it looked like it went backwards. But then it would, you know, when the refraction stops, then there would be a quick movement forwards too. And that's not mentioned in the text. And so what's that? Or another option could be that the earth stopped and that it rotated backwards and then started up again. And so you have to stop the earth. And so, you know, mass has a tendency to stay in motion. That's what we were talking about with oceans and the earth itself. And then you have to start the earth going backwards. And then you have to stop it again. And you have to start it again going the other way. That's, you know, that's going to shake things up pretty significantly. And so what could be happening there? Here's another thing that's really interesting about this whole thing. When you go through, and I think we talked about this not too long ago. I can't remember why I did it, but in the Bible, in the early chapters of the Bible, it looks like they have a different year. In the book of Genesis, it looks like they're dealing with a 368 year. And so in Genesis, in chapter 8, for example, 7 and 8, it talks about the flood, and it talks about 5 months, or excuse me, is it 5 months? Yeah, 5 months. And it says it's 130 or 150 days. Well, 5 months is not 150 days. It doesn't work that way. And actually, if you're talking about lunar months, I don't know if I want to get in the weeds on this, but generally speaking, a month is figured out by the moon. In fact, so that's where you get the word month from. It's of the moon, basically. Month means, you know, it's the idea. So it's the period of time from a new moon to a new moon. New moon is just when you see a sliver on the moon, when it's over by the sun. And so that's called a new moon. It goes about 28 days, 28 and some odd days in between new moons. And so 30 days is not a month as far as lunar calendar goes. And so there's some problems there. And when you look at all the ancient calendars, it looks like every one of the ancient calendars had a 360-day calendar. And I've gone through and looked at this extensively. It includes the Egyptians. And so lots of times when people are talking about ancient calendars, they like to go to the Egyptian calendar and say that these guys had a 365-day year from the whole time that they had a calendar. It's not true. It's not true. And so the Egyptians had a 360-day calendar. The Romans had a 360-day calendar. The Greeks, the Sumerians, the Babylonians. You know, the whole idea of 360 degrees in a circle? It comes from the year. And it comes from the, when you're looking at the sky, there's what's called the ecliptic, where the sun passes through the sky, where the moon passes, and where all the planets pass through the sky. The reason that we have 12 constellations in the zodiac is because the sky is divided up into 360 degrees, and those 360 degrees are divided up into 12 parts, and each one of those parts is the area of the zodiac that's, you know, divvied up into the 12 months of the year. So 360 degrees, 360 days, and so on and so forth. And that's where we get these things from. It comes from the Babylonians. So they had a 360-day year. The Indians, talking about old India, had a 360-day calendar. The Mayans, the Aztecs. In fact, right around this time, this is 701 BC, it's the 8th century BC, all of a sudden, every calendar on the planet gets changed. These guys start messing with their calendars. And so, for example, the Romans, all the way up until the times of Jesus, only got paid for 360 days' work. The extra 5 days were considered to be unlucky. And so a Roman soldier didn't get paid for 365 days of work. He got paid for 360 days. And in every single one of the calendars, they had different ways of managing this stuff. But in most of these calendars, they continued to have 30-day months and 12 months in the year, 360-day years. And then at the end of the year, they had to tack on 5 days. The Jews still do that to this day. They have a little bit different system, but they're still going off a lunar calendar. So do the Muslims. They still go off a lunar calendar. It's a very ancient tradition. And so something weird is going on. Something weird takes place in between the 8th century and the 4th century BC, where everybody has to change their calendars. And one of the things that you see about the issues that are going on there is the extra 5 days are always considered to be unlucky. They're always considered to be evil on some level. When you get to the book of Daniel, in the book of Daniel, when Daniel is giving prophecies about the end times, there are 360-day years. So time, times, and half a time is 3.5 years, and it's 1,260 days, and it's 42 months of 30-day months. And that's something that's carried on into the New Testament in the book of Revelation. Now, what commentators will call that is the prophetic year. There's no reason to call it a prophetic year. There's nothing in the Bible that says, okay, we have 1 year that we keep by, you know, looking at a solar calendar, and we have another year that we keep by not looking at a lunar calendar, but looking at a made-up lunar calendar. Because a Jewish year, going by the months the lunar calendar, is not a 360-day year, because it doesn't add up to that. And so where did this whole thing come from, and why are they changing calendars? And so it looks like some pretty radical things were taking place back in those days. With the situation with Joshua, here's another thing that's interesting, is a lot of the, there have been guys who've gone through the Bible, and this isn't necessarily so. I'm going out here on a limb here, you guys. I'm doing some speculation here. But there are guys who've written books on this. One of them is called The Long Day of Joshua. Chuck Missler quotes from it all the time. And in the book, these guys postulate that maybe the orbits of the Earth and Mars were different way back when. Because most of you guys don't know this, because you're probably not paying attention to astronomy and stuff. But the Earth's orbit is pretty circular. The Venus's orbit is almost absolutely circular. Mars's orbit is highly elliptical. And actually, there is a resonance between the orbit of Mars and the orbit of the Earth. There happens to be these distances that you go out from the sun, and it looks like the planets are in places where there's what's called a resonant orbit. So for example, Mars's orbit, I think it's 680 some odd days. One of you guys can Google it for me. But it's 680 some odd days. We have a calendar, or a solar year of 365 days, and 365 and a quarter days. And these guys postulated, well, what if Mars's orbit used to be 720 days. And Earth's orbit used to be 360 days, which is what it looks like from all the ancient calendars. Then you would have an orbit where every time Mars went around the sun, when Mars went around the sun once, it would be exactly 2 years. That's what a resonant orbit is, okay? And if that was the case, and if it was even more highly elliptical, and for example, it came within the orbit of the Earth, in fact, intersected the orbit of the Earth. So it's like Mars is out here doing this stuff, Earth is coming around like this, and Mars comes inside the Earth's orbit as the Earth is moving and goes back outside. And if it did something like that, you could have flybys of Mars. And there are these stories that you have in ancient mythology, specifically about the planets, where the planets are very scary as far as the ancient people go. I don't know, how many of you, if you went outside, pick out Mars just by looking up at the sky? 1, 2, right? You didn't have that with the ancient people. These guys knew what Mars was, and most people don't know that. Here's another thing. People will say, well, they had a 360-day calendar. Maybe they didn't know what a year was. And that's goofy, because these guys are farmers. And so they are planting their crops based on where the sun's going to be at in certain times of the year. And so you have the spring and the fall equinox. That's when basically the day and the night is exactly the same. 6 o'clock in the morning goes to 6 o'clock at night, and night goes from 6 to 6. Those are the equinoxes. And then right around Christmas and at the end of June, Christmas or December 22nd and June 22nd, you have the shortest and longest days of the year. Okay, it has to do with the tilt of the earth. In any case, these guys know this stuff, and so they knew how to do a year. They knew when a year started. They knew when a year ended. These people are not a bunch of cavemen running around. In fact, they were probably more knowledgeable about how to pick out when a year starts than you probably are. How many of you, if you had nothing, you had no watches, no nothing, no calendars, no nothing, could figure out how many days in a year just by looking at the sun? How many of you could do that? Raise your hands. Okay, so one. Anybody else? Two. Rod, come on. Yeah. The way that you figure out what a year is by where the sun sets. And so to figure out what a half year is, all you got to do is, or where it sets or where it rises, all you got to do is look at the horizon when the sun's setting, and when the sun gets to the furthest point to the south, from our perspective, to the south, then that is going to be the shortest day of the year. When it gets to the furthest point to the north, that's the longest day of the year. That is 6 months. And when it goes through that cycle from south all the way to north and all the way back to south, that's 1 year. And so anybody can figure out how long a year is, and these guys would have known that. These guys were sophisticated. They would have known that. And the problem is something changed. And so what changed? And so what these guys postulated, the guys that I was talking about with the book The Long Day of Joshua, is that Mars got close to Earth, and when you have something like that taking place, you can have the speed of objects in space speed up or slow down depending on what kind of flyby it is. So we do this all the time with satellites. So if you want a satellite to go quickly out to Jupiter, they don't shoot it to Jupiter. They shoot it to Venus. And Venus is the next planet in towards the sun. So they shoot it to Venus and they do a close flyby of Venus. And when the probe gets close to the planet Venus, there is momentum that gets traded. And so it gets close to Venus, it starts speeding up, and then it moves out, and it's moving at a much quicker clip than when it went in. And what's happened is there's momentum that's been traded between Venus and the probe. So what's happened is Venus has slowed down, like minuscule amounts, because probes are very small. But Venus has slowed down a little bit, and the probe has speeded up a whole lot because of the differential in mass. And so that's how they speed up probes, like the Jupiter probes or Voyager 1 and 2 and those things. That's how they do that, okay? And so if you have the same thing happening with planets, that's exactly what's going to take place. And so if you have a number of close flybys, and what's going to happen is the momentum of the Earth around the sun can be changed by a close flyby of something that's large. Here's another thing that happens. You get something that's large flying by the Earth, and it's going to make tides. This is what happens with the moon. And so as the moon's going around the Earth, you guys know about high tides, right? And so that's because the moon's going around the Earth and it's basically pulling up the oceans towards the moon. The moon has a gravitational effect on the Earth. It doesn't just do it with the oceans, it does it with the land. And so you have land tides when the moon goes over that can be up to a foot. They've measured these things. So the land literally comes up a foot when the moon comes over. Okay, now the moon's 250,000 miles away, basically. Quarter of a million miles away, 225. But a quarter of a million miles away is where the moon's at. And the moon's significantly small. If you have something large coming by the Earth, not only are you going to have a trade-off of momentum in a situation like that, but you're going to have a bulging of the Earth. You have a bulging of the Earth, weird things can happen.
Been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday service times are 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. We also meet on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today and will join us again next time on Crosswalk.